My question is maybe just a comment. I'd like to play around a bit more with the metaphor of the mustard seed.
Okay.
I completely agree with you that if it's used in relationship to the church, mm-hmm. it becomes an affirmation of complacency around just trusting that our decline mm-hmm. and our smallness mm-hmm. is something that is even the will of God, da 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 da. And yet I think there's another way to come at metaphors because there's always more than one point of entry.
Mm-hmm.
And that the image, I completely agree with you that the incarnation is the way in which we need to start beginning to understand a depth of our faith. And if you have faith of a mustard seed, mm-hmm. the other understanding of the mustard seed being an invasive weed, which also has that mm-hmm. potential to, when we go into that deep place of the incarnation, when we go into that mm-hmm. deep encounter of God within us and in the world,
mm-hmm.
that there's this possibility of some deep roots growing and engaging in the mm-hmm. world in that kind of way, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
Which I think fits with your argument,
mm-hmm.
so that we don't have to throw the mustard seed out.
Mm-hmm. No.
But hear it from the word that Jesus said. It was about faith and
yeah.
the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
But if we associate it with simply the church, then it becomes
yeah.
complacency,
yeah.
and we can just throw yeah. up our hands and say, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
But I think
yeah.
if we hear it from the context of the possibilities of hope, and maybe I'm looking for too much hope.
Oh, no. We should always look for hope and
okay.
be open to it. Not in a sentimental, let's distract ourselves way, but of course, we're called to live in hope, and we gather at the Eucharist to have our hope renewed and refreshed and strengthened. So that's all. No, I appreciate very much your reading. I don't think we should throw out the parable. No, not. Oh, heavens no. I mean, heavens no. And if not at all. It was how the parable was being used in my hearing and in relation to the church and its situation. But no, and I really like the reference to the mustard seed as a weed, right? Because I firmly, not only believe, but I think, and I hope you have these experiences too. I mean, I think I continually have experiences where it's pretty clear we can try to throw God out, or he's not going to let us go, right? You can pull out those weeds and they're just coming back, right? The kingdom is determined to grow in our midst, and we can work with it, resist it, right? And grow with it or not sometimes, right? But it's going to continue to grow around us, and that's part of being attentive to that. That I think, and so that's where the power of that parable is really helpful.
You've raised so many questions in my mind that my mind is just awash in questions to ask and areas to probe. I certainly agree with you that many. People in our society know so little about the faith. Mm. I had one young man tell me he knew so little about the faith he didn't even know what questions to ask
mm-hmm.
about Christianity,
mm-hmm.
which makes me wonder if they're moved by whatever motivation to appear in church one Sunday, how do they react to what they hear and see and experience in that? And that raises with me a whole series of questions. But I wanted to go back to the very beginning of your lecture where you commented on the decline and what's happening with emptying churches, having to sell churches and all that. I think, as you pointed out, that could be a huge advantage to the church, because it's forcing us to again ask the question, mm-hmm. who are we really, and who Jesus is really, and who God is. So it could be a hugely creative and exciting, wonderful experience for the church to really have to deal with that, which I think it does have to.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, that's very painful.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to have to face the reality of all the decline, what that means, which says to me then we need really very strong, healthy, life-giving Christian communities that enable us
mm-hmm.
to deal with the negative stuff, but at the same time take advantage of this hugely creative opportunity to find out, to wrestle with who we are. I certainly agree with your comment, too, that the church is not the gift. Mm-hmm. But in some sense, a healthy, life-giving Christian community is a gift.
Sure.
So I question, how do we move the contemporary church to really be excited by the possibilities that lie before it and not be overcome by a paralysis of fear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I didn't really address, so thank you for raising it. Is the understandable and necessary work of grieving, right? That's one of the real pastoral challenges we have, isn't it? Because understandably, with loss comes grieving, right? And that's part of being a human being, right? And that's one thing I think the incarnation would help reassure us of, right? We need not resent our human need to mourn and grieve because of our very creaturely attachments, which are usually good, right? And this is a real challenge, very difficult, right? And when I was ordained a deacon, and I was assigned a three-point parish, it was clear on my appointment I was going to be the last full-time ordained pastor in this parish. And I wasn't there that long. I mean, it was 5-6 months, right? And so I wasn't there that long, and that was difficult because they knew that before I arrived, beginning that process, like talking about the future, right, and the fear and anxiety, and trying to work with people to help them honor. I mean, it became, they taught me about all the things there were to mourn, which were good to mourn, right? I mean, it was appropriate to mourn, but talking them about, you know, the fact that you're not going to have a full-time ordained minister here doesn't mean the church is over or Anglicanism in your area is over, but we need to talk about other ways that you can worship and witness and what church will be like in the future and how difficult it was to get to that point. And partly I was probably just too inexperienced, but also I didn't have very long. I think that's a journey, right? And that's the discernment that's difficult for pastoral ministry is when to simply accept and acknowledge we're in the process of mourning and when it's time to start pushing and moving forward, right? And here I think, of course, again, I'm not talking, these are all East Coast anecdotes, so don't start. What congregation am I talking about? I'm originally from New Brunswick, and then served in Nova Scotia. But you know, we have them here though. Parish mergers, right? Especially I'm thinking rural areas in this case, though. But where, you know, we're going to combine two congregations, and a number of people say, "Well, I'm not going to drive all the way over there, right, on a Sunday morning." Now they will drive all the way over there to go to Tim Hortons, right, or go to Walmart, but they, you know, they're just, now, you know, that's really frustrating. Right? But part of it is the grief work, and that's part of what we need to do. But it's pretty clear that the church can't, the church, big C, can't decide that its main task is palliative care, right? And so we need to keep the vision beyond that, but at the same time honor our human need to mourn, honor the very good reasons why people are in mourning, and work with them to the extent they are ready and able and willing on this is part of that path in the spiritual life, which is difficult, the pass through the wilderness, the dark night of the soul. Jesus was there. You've probably been there before in your life, and we're here again, and no one likes that, and no one should, right? But it's part of our growth as Christians, as disciples, and as the church, and our task, those who find ourselves there, is let's mourn faithfully, let's try to make sure we communicate clearly what it is that we're mourning, and we're faithful in our mourning. We're not bitter, resentful. Let's share the joy behind the reasons we mourn, communicate that, pass that on. But let's not be defined. I mean, I'm not a huge Freudian, but one thing Sigmund Freud really put his finger on is the distinction between mourning and melancholy, right? Mourning, the necessary time-taking process of letting go and acknowledging something important has been lost. And the melancholy, that's the refusal to leave that place. I'm now defined by this anger and disappointment. And I think too often our churches, our people slide into melancholy. Right? We're not just sad. We don't even imagine ourselves being anything different than what we have been, and we're angry about that. And that's hard work, though. But I think that's part of a lot of what our clergy, our bishops, our deacons, our lay people, our wardens are really wrestling with right now, and they need our support and prayer in that ministry.
I have a question just regarding this thought of God is for me. In the last two decades, hasn't been quite a bit of growth in the more Protestant evangelical churches where this seems to be the theme, that your personal relationship with God is the most important, and much of the choruses and singing speaks about that. And there's been quite a growth in that field, because it seems that a lot of people, that meant a lot to them, and some of them are flocking to some of these churches. Yep. So is this a passing fancy, or how do you see that in the big picture?
Sure. No, I don't think that's a passing fancy. I think that's always been with us, right? And it's not all bad, right? God is for you and for me. And that's important for us to know and important for us to hear. So the only problem there is when that's the only message, right? That's the only level of spirituality. That's where any engagement with God and God's mystery and God's call to us stops, right? And there are churches where that just stops, right? And which means one would wonder how long and vibrant that spiritual journey will be for people. There are movements that are more problematic than simply being somewhat narrow in their piety and spirituality and worship. And they take advantage of people, right? They do. And it works. And, I mean, I've had a doctoral student study neo-Pentecostal apostolic churches in Rio de Janeiro, and he tried to figure out why people are attracted to these churches and so on. But also, one thing he found himself doing is starting to meet a lot of people who used to go to these churches and were now very bitter. And so over-promising. So, you know, if you do this, God will do this for you. That kind of transactional figures can be quite damaging spiritually. But I don't think the message is that God is for me is inherently bad. It needs to be part of our ministry. It's for some people, obviously, they really need to hear it, which is why they're attracted to it. But some of its growth is also because, I think where I ended in my lecture, is we live in very, very anxious times, and people are quite anxious. We're in transition. And so we are looking for reassurance that it's going to be okay, right? And that's true here, and that's true in places like Africa, where urbanization is happening at astonishing rates, and young people are finding themselves in cities without their traditional family structures, without anyone they know, maybe even different tribal groups, and they need places to go where they get some reassurance and support. And so they're quite attracted to these churches, and understandably so. It's just what we would hope is that these churches would preach the fullness of the gospel and the spiritual life, and help people mature in their faith and vision. And it seems like in these anxious times, we're not always prepared to do that. But I don't think that's going to change, and I don't think it's all bad, but I think that's one of the patterns we find ourselves in.
One of the experiences of being the incumbent at Church of the Redeemer at the corner of Avenue Road and Bloor Street is that for a number of years, the largest segment of newcomers coming through the doors were actually coming from Pentecostal, Evangelical, Baptist, mm-hmm. More conservative and more literalist traditions of the mm-hmm. church. And the comments were always the same. They were folks who often said, I know my Bible, I know it really well, and what I'm becoming attracted to is the liturgy in the Anglican tradition, that I'm tired of a prescribed faith, and what I'm actually discovering is by entering into the fullness of the liturgy that I'm experiencing and seeing God in a new way. Mm-hmm. And I've always found that as a real gift as an Anglican, in an age of deep anxiety, that rather than prescribing faith, there's a deep invitation to step inside and to be transformed together. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank you, Chris, for being with us tonight, for opening the Snell Lectures and getting us started on this conversation on the future of the church. And we're very grateful for your opening words and look forward to tomorrow morning with Bishop Andrews, who will start us off at 9:30 in the morning. The coffee is on at 9, along with muffins, so we hope that you will join us early. And I would invite us all to stand and we'll say the words of the doxology at the close of our worship. As we say together, glory to God, whose power.